This is NASCAR driver Tony Breininger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Hold the deep fry on Broadway, the donuts, and the Bronx. New York City is banning trans fats from New York restaurants. The hydrogenated oils that have crackled up millions of fried meals and put the flake in millions of flaky crusts are headed off the menu. Restaurateurs are up in arms, charging social engineering and predicting doom, but doctors say trans fats are the champ at clogging American hearts. And New York is saying no more, it's poison. Lead paint is out, smoking in bars is out, and now trans fats are headed out too. From Chicago to Louisville and beyond, other cities may follow. Up next on Point, trans fats get the boot in New York City. We begin with a closer look at the details of New York's trans fats ban. Fred Mogul is health and medicine correspondent for NPR member station WNYC and attended yesterday's vote. He joins me from New York. Fred, thanks for being with us. What exactly has the Public Health Commission said here?
Well, they have said after several months of public comment that trans fats must be phased out of all restaurants. The restaurants will have 6 months to get it out of the fryolators, the deep fryers, and out of spreads like dips and things, your artichoke dip at Fridays. And they'll have 18 months to get them out of other things, salad dressings, baked goods, where they add shelf life and they make pie crusts moist or biscuits or donuts especially. That's a little trickier, so the restaurants are being given more time to recalibrate the recipes.
So a two-step boot. You've got a health nut there in your Mayor Michael Bloomberg. How's New York City responding to trans fats going away, getting the boot? Are people applauding? Are they up in arms? What's the response?
I mean, I think most people don't really mind at all. They think, well, if the restaurants can just as easily use a different kind of shortening or fat or oil, then why not? It seems like a relatively easy thing to do, at least from the consumer's point of view. Of course, the restaurants, depending on what kind of products they have, think it's not so easy, and it might, you know, cost them some money.
Now, Fred, remind us, Fred, why it is that New York is so eager to get trans fats out of the food in restaurants.
Well, these are partially hydrogenated oils. We call them artery clogging oils. They raise cholesterol. They raise the bad kind of cholesterol. They actually lower the good kind of cholesterol. And they aren't single-handedly the culprit for heart disease and stroke and various health problems, but they do add to it. And they're relatively easy to remove in the sense that they're one ingredient, they're an artificial ingredient, there are plenty of substitutes. And now if you said we're going to ban saturated fats, say, which is fairly bad for you by plenty of accounts,
that would be butter and its cousins, yeah.
Right, exactly. It's basically animal-based fats, not exclusively, but your butter, your steaks, you know, that stuff will get you almost as much, but it's much, you couldn't really ban that. It's just everywhere. It's in too many different products.
Because we eat those foods, and I'm looking here at the list of things with trans fats. I mean, fast food, forget it. It's traditionally, it's all over the place, but donuts and spreads and muffins and pies and crackers and cookies and Pop-Tarts, forget it. Microwave popcorn, bean dips, gravy mixes, salad dressing. What are restaurants saying about this? Presumably, they're the ones who are making the changes. Are they going with the flow or are they fighting?
Well, you know, a lot of them are going along with it. The FDA a couple years ago required that it be listed in ingredients in packaged foods, and the larger food industry that makes that has been phasing it out. And so their counterparts in the industrial fast food complex also, to some extent, have been phasing it out. KFC, Wendy's, Arby's have been getting on board. McDonald's and Burger King a little more reluctantly. It will be tricky for them because they buy things by the boatload, proverbially. For smaller restaurants, Chinese restaurants, all kinds of ethnic foods and diners and so on, it will be you know, it won't be that hard necessarily, at least in terms of getting an adequate supply. Again, they will have to rejigger their recipes, and many do feel it's just sort of unnecessary interference.
And what's the thought about what the impact of this may be? New York, big city, people eat out a lot. I'm looking here at an estimate that New Yorkers get one-third of their calories from outside the home. So if trans fats go away over the next year and a half, what are health officials there estimating may be the positive impact on New York's population?
Well, they say the average American eats about 10 pounds of these things a year. When they first made this announcement, they gave a little visual. They had two big plates covered with this stuff. It looked like they were going to do a little slapstick pie routine.
Yeah.
You know, it just and said, "Oh, this is what's this is what's in your arteries after a year." You know, and then yesterday when they finally passed it, one of the health board members, the administrative body that made this change to the health code, this particular board member was an ER physician, an emergency room physician in Upper New York, and she said, "Well, she expects to see fewer people in the ER with heart attacks and so forth." I mean, I think that's not so realistic. If you eat, you know, X number of meals a week at McDonald's and KFC or wherever, or pepperoni pizza or egg rolls, you know, you probably are still at a pretty high risk. This is just one factor among many.
So don't pretend that just getting rid of these solves everything. But New York's stepping up here in an interesting way in lots of places, eyeing this. Chicago looking at it, Louisville, Kentucky looking at it. Does New York see itself as potentially a trendsetter for the country with this, Fred?
I think absolutely. The Commissioner of Health is a man named Dr. Thomas Frieden. He's worked on both a national and international stage, and he recognizes that New York City is sort of a bully pulpit to get health initiatives out, and that other cities will follow. You know, we only have about 3%, merely 3% for one city of the fast food market. But that is a lot, and if companies that distribute nationally have to change in New York, they might just consider changing it nationwide. So I think they are hoping that it will follow suit, as with the smoking ban. Not that it's exactly coast to coast on that front, but a lot of cities and states have followed New York's lead.
And New Yorkers have been looking even further back. Dr. Frieden, the public health leader there, saying it's like lead paint, trans fats. You know, you've got to get rid of it. Why not have those who dine in restaurants track it for themselves? I guess because they just can't know.
Well, you know, that's what they say. They say it's sort of a consumer protection thing that, you know, the consumer advocates or people on the government side of it anyway say, well, you know, they have a sort of crude adage. You're allowed to sell people crap as long as you tell them it's crap. Excuse my language. And there's a more vulgar way that's expressed, too. You know, that you have to tell people it, and that people who show up in restaurants don't really know it. Or they don't have a choice. You know, they just have to get what they're served. That's a little disingenuous. I mean, first of all, people, you know, they could just force the restaurants to put signs on their doors. You know, like the Surgeon General has found trans fats, you know, in these French fries aren't good for you. So it's not exactly fair that way.
But the city stepping in here, this coming in, first step next summer, and everything by the summer of 08, a big move in New York that lots of cities and towns around the country will be watching. Fred Mogul at WNYC in New York, great to have you with us. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
I want to turn now to a restaurateur in New York, one of the tens of thousands who will be dealing with the new ban. Steve Auerbach joins us. He's owner of the Stage Deli, a real New York institution. Mr. Auerbach, thanks for being here.
Hey, Tom. How are you?
We're good. So we hear a lot of restaurateurs crying out about this, saying this is too much, too fast, we can't do it. How do you respond to New York City's ban on trans fats?
Well, you know something, they really are crying out about it. But, you know, the way we feel here at the Stage Deli, it's not going to be too much of a problem. For years, we've always seen the trend in food has gone the way of less of the saturated fats, more turkeys, more salads. And we tried to, you know, go with the trend. In the long run, it probably will help the health of our customers.
So for most restaurateurs, Steve, where do you think this is going to hit first? They're going to have to look at their fry-a-laters, at which foods. What are people going to have to change most on menus right away?
Well, I think what we have to do is look at our purveyors, the people who bring foods into our restaurants, and their ingredients. I think we have to look at some, like as Fred mentioned before, you know, like even something as simple as crackers, which, you know, we certainly don't bake crackers here at the Stage Deli, but we serve them in our soups and on the side. And the purveyor is going to have to take a deep look at that, how they're produced and just, you know, where they're going. If they're going to New York, they can't have the trans fat.
And if I walk into a restaurant in New York in a year or two and ask for French fries, what are they going to be fried in?
Well, generally, they're going to be fried in something like akin to canola oil, which we've used here for many years already, just because to follow the trend. There's a lot more allergies out there also. Some places have used peanut oil in the past. There's a big influx of allergies to peanuts and peanut oil. So canola oil seems to be a good alternative.
And do you think restaurant goers are going to notice a different flavor? I mean, McDonald's resisted for years getting rid of beef tallow and now is resisting getting rid of the trans fats it uses for its French fries, we read. Are people going to tell the difference? Are they going to say, this isn't flaky enough, this doesn't taste right?
In my personal opinion, I'm a big believer in the technology, and I think we'll be able to find other avenues to get the menus right. I don't see a big flavor problem.
Are you worried about the city breathing down your neck on this? Does it seem, you know, like the right thing to do? Or are you complaining, hey, government, bug out. I've got a restaurant to run here, and people like trans fats. Thank you.
Well, that's a whole other issue. You know, Dr. Frieden has come in, and he's a very strong leader of the Board of Health, and he's coming with many, many changes as for temperature controls and quality controls in each individual restaurant, he imposes huge fines and closures and he's just that type of operator. So I mean, what we have to do is if we can't fight it, we have to just join him.
Sounds like you're ready to bring on everything else, whatever that may be. So a few saturated fats may make their way back into the menu.
Well, our saturated fats, I mean, we serve corned beef and pastrami, and yeah, it's kind of hard to get the saturated fat out of that
right.
stuff.
Nature
chopped liver. And,
right. It's right in the middle of that New York menu, and we hear it. Mr. Auerbach, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
We've heard a couple of voices right there from New York, where the ban begins to go into effect this coming summer. Chicago looking at a ban like this, Louisville looking at a ban like this, maybe others as well. We're joined right now from New Haven, Connecticut, by Kelly Brownell, director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University, professor of psychology, epidemiology, and public health at Yale. Professor Brownell, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So you're watching this news. New York City, great big city, says no thank you. Restaurants cannot serve this anymore. As a public health guy, what do you think of this? Is this the way to go?
Well, yes, it is the way to go, and it's absolutely groundbreaking. It's made possible by having a progressive and quite heroic, I think, Commissioner of Health, Thomas Frieden, in New York City, backed up by a very public health-oriented mayor. And so New York City happens to be the first place to do this, but the hope is that other places will do it well. And I think the key conceptual shift here is that everybody agrees that health commissioners have a jurisdiction over the safety of food, and we're concerned about the impacts of food on our immediate health. So if a restaurant serves things that make us sick to our stomach or create food poisoning, we jump all over that, and we agree that health commissioners should have jurisdiction. The question is whether jurisdiction should also apply to longer-term health consequences like those that accrue from trans fats. And New York City has declared the answer is yes, and I believe other cities will follow suit.
We've got a New York City councilor comparing trans fats to rat poison. Is it that clear? What's the science here? They jack up bad cholesterol-forming elements in the blood, and they push down good ones, we hear, but are they really that much worse than what may come in their stead, butter, palm oils, the rest?
You've raised a good question about what the restaurants will do in reaction to the ban on trans fats. The hope is that they'll respond like the owner of the Stage Deli did by replacing them with much healthier fats, and there should be considerable benefit. It's possible that the restaurants will use saturated fats as a replacement, in which case there will be some benefit, but not nearly as much as if they go all the way and use something like canola oil.
But you know what Americans eat and what they have long loved to eat. Can we have that same diet? Can we go out to dinner in New York and expect the things that people, you know, are looking forward to if it's not saturated fats, if they really try and go with the lighter oils?
There are two responses to that. First, with the trans fats, this is a pretty easy change for the industry to make. And I believe there are stories behind the stated story with their objections. I think they're concerned about much more than just trans fat, and we can talk about that as you wish. But the overall question is, what impact will this have on the way consumers perceive their diet? Now, in the case of trans fats, this shouldn't shrink consumers' choices in restaurants. It shouldn't affect the cost of their food, and it shouldn't affect the taste. And enough restaurants have made the change already to prove this to be the case. The question is, if you go further and start getting after things like saturated fat, would that really affect taste, cost, and accessibility of foods? And the answer could be yes. And instead of shrinking away from that as a possibility by saying, oh, my God, consumers really have to have this many donuts and that many crackers and this many candy bars and these many French fries, maybe we need to think differently about the food supply in terms of its effect on human health.
Does that mean the nanny state? I mean, people like to eat it. Are you saying we just can't afford to have people eating these things? We know the obesity problem. We know the morbidity rate from heart disease. Are you saying that Americans need to change their diets and a little push from the city or whoever's looking over the shoulder is the way to go?
I don't think anybody in their right mind would say that Americans don't need to change their diet. And it's not true, not just true of Americans, but really of every country in the world where you're seeing remarkable increases in the prevalence of obesity and diabetes and other diseases related to poor diet. The question about a nanny state is an interesting one, and people say that government should not be involved in what we eat. Well, the fact is government is involved in what we eat. Think of subsidies, for example, to the agriculture industry. Mm-hmm. Have very heavy subsidies to the corn farmers. That drives down the price of corn, which makes it cheaper to feed beef cattle and pigs and chickens. And so meat is artificially subsidized by the government. So are soft drinks because of the high fructose corn syrup that's derived from corn that goes into sweetening not only the soft drinks but a lot of other products. So the fact is, if you go to McDonald's today or Burger King and you buy the salad and a drink, you'll pay more than if you buy, say, a double quarter pounder with cheese value meal. Right. And part of the reason, and that's, of course, the reverse of the way you'd like a culture to be, and it's because, in part, that the government is helping you buy the hamburger and helping you buy the soft drink, but they're not helping you buy the salad very much. So government is involved, but almost always it's in favor of the industry rather than public health.
And shaping our diets already at a very basic level. But let me ask you this. If trans fats are so bad, why isn't the federal government doing something about them? Why is it left to New York and potentially other cities and towns around the country? I mean, the FDA is supposed to be protecting our health as well.
This is a case study that very closely mimics what's happened in other areas like tobacco, where the federal government has been very slow to react. And much of the victories, especially in the early days, occur state or local levels. So, for example, with cigarette smoking, the federal government is still doing almost nothing to curb tobacco use. But it's the states with high taxes and banning smoking in public places and the like that have really made the difference. And that all started locally with groups of citizens rising up to take action. And you see the same thing playing out where the federal government talks a lot about dealing with the obesity issue. And in some portions of the government, like the Centers for Disease Control, they are doing a lot. But as a whole, the government's doing very little, and it's essentially behaving as if its main mission is to protect industry interest. And so these local victories will occur and then hopefully spread to other places and then finally create pressure on state governments and then the federal government to take action.
And a big local step in a great big city, New York City, banning trans fats. Kelly Brownell, please stand by. A lot of listeners want to join this conversation. Let me go to Ken in Buford, South Carolina. Hi, Ken. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom.
Hey.
Hey, what? Your expert kind of stole my thunder, but then he's supposed to because he's an expert.
What do you see? What do you say, Ken?
Well, what a great – I say three things, and I'll be real quick.
Sure.
What a great place for it to happen, New York. I mean you start to have a worldwide effect there. Secondly, the fact that it's a government doing this, now just words right out of his mouth that instead of them supporting the hamburger, they support the salad. It might be a real big change there, and other things will follow in suit.
So you're for it. You're happy to see this intervention.
Yeah, I think, you see things like church and state and health department and food and business tied together, but this is a good way.
The wall between French fry and state, you're willing to have it come down, or at least trans fat get French fry.
We're going to eat what's put in front of us.
Right.
That's just the thing. If we could change the cost factor involved in dealing with a salad, for example, rather than a French fry. And at first there's going to be a bubble. There's going to be a rush to charge more, and the distributors are going to be charging more. And then it'll level out, and they'll figure out a way to produce good foods at the same cost they did bad foods. It might take some time, but...
They don't have too long here in New York City. They're going to have to hot-foot it. Ken, we hear you saying, bring it on. Thanks for your call. Let me get another from Boston. David's on the line. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. Great show. I guess the aspect I'm looking at it is really more from a civil liberties point of view.
Yeah.
And I have just a few points, and I can take my answer off the air. But basically, smoking bans are valid because they affect other people. Lead paint bans are valid because they affect children who can't help themselves. Alcohol is not banned, yet it affects others in so many ways, in terms of personal problems and death, as well as alcohol-related vehicular.
So do you want to leave trans fats in the alcohol category? I mean, what about, isn't it like lead paint in a way? You go to the restaurant, it may just fall on your plate, whether you know it's coming or not.
I agree, but you know what? Food is an item that affects only the individual. And I think, why does the government need to regulate our lives? I mean, when do we start banning hot dogs and sausages and fatty beef? They contain the same kinds of, maybe not trans fats, but they contain the same kinds of nutritional components that give us this incredibly obese society.
What do you say to Kelly Brownell's observation that government's involved already, that government policy is making a lot of fatty foods cheap for Americans to buy, and Lord knows they're buying them and eating them?
Well, I agree with those. Those policies are wrong, and I don't often agree with subsidies. I mean, we artificially prop up our farmers, and I know the reasons why it's done, and it's to keep them in business, but it's artificially done, and it just perpetuates the problem. I mean, one day, is the government, either New York City government or the U.S. government, going to say, you know, I can only weigh 180 pounds. After the 81st pound, I have to start going on a diet,
right.
A government-enforced diet.
So it's the big question, the civil liberties argument. Let me get one more call, and we'll come back to Kelly on it. Kathleen's calling from Woodbury, Connecticut. Kathleen, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm glad to follow this last gentleman who just called in and feels that it doesn't affect anyone else. And I just want to tell him to look at our healthcare industry and the extreme cost we have in healthcare. And I'm so happy to see New York doing this. And I wish it could come from the federal government, but your guest is right. So much of the government is supporting the things that we don't need in our diet, the corn syrup, the artificial colors and flavors, the trans fats. And I don't think we should confuse saturated fats, because there are some good plant saturated fats that can be used, like coconut oil, which is supposed to be very good for our bodies and is a saturated fat. So back to the caller who thinks that this doesn't affect, if somebody else goes and eats the hamburger, it doesn't affect all of us. It does.
One big circle there. Kathleen, we've got it, but watch out for that coconut oil on the cholesterol front. Let me turn, if I may, to a voice of the restaurateur business for a minute. Charles Hunt is with us from New York. He's executive vice president of the New York City chapter of the New York State Restaurant Association. Charles Hunt, thanks for being with us.
I'm happy to be here.
So here I've got a spokesman for the National Restaurant Association saying this is an attempt at misguided social engineering. What do you say to New York's ban on trans fats?
Well, first of all, I want to make it clear that initially they proposed a voluntary program to reduce the use of products containing trans fats.
In fact, they've already had that for a while, right?
Yes, and we cooperated thoroughly with that, and we agree with the idea that restaurants should reduce or eliminate the use of these products. However, we don't agree that it should be done through regulation. We think it should be done through education.
But did people really pick it up at the voluntary level? Could you walk into a restaurant in New York and feel confident you wouldn't have French fries boiled in trans fats?
Well, the Department of Health and Mental Hygiene indicated when they proposed a ban versus a voluntary program that in the course of the year, there had been no change in the number of restaurants that were using products with trans fats. We beg to differ with that. I did a survey of our members. It wasn't it was a quick survey. There were only a few questions, and of course, you never get everyone to respond to it. But the great majority of my members that responded to this indicated that they had indeed already tried to make a change and had made a change.
But in that case, it should be no big deal to get rid of it. Let me ask you this. As someone who goes to a restaurant, when Americans go to a restaurant, or New Yorkers, shouldn't they be able to have some confidence that things that don't need to be dangerous to their health aren't, that they're not encouraging a heart attack willy-nilly? I mean, what's the downside of giving people that confidence when they walk into a restaurant?
There's no downside to giving people that confidence. I think it should be made clear that the use of trans fats in restaurants is not the sole provider of this FDA-approved product.
Right. People use it at home. They're going to make their pies with Crisco, or at least still do many, but they can change if they don't want it. At a restaurant, you don't know. If there's not a ban, you don't know for sure. Is it going to change the menu? Is it going to change the cost, Mr. Hunt?
Well, you know, it's a difficult situation because when you change the products that you're using and your customers expect consistency in terms of quality and what they have learned to expect, it takes some revisions in your processes. It takes revisions in the way in which you prepare things. You want to maintain the flavor. You have signature items that they expect to be the same as they were the last time they came in. We're not objecting to the idea of a program to reduce the use. We are objecting to it being done by Fiat, and we're objecting to the fact that they're not giving us enough time to do it properly and fairly.
Charles Hunt in New York, stand by. I want to take a call from Melvin in Silver Spring, Maryland. Hi, Melvin. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I don't go to fast food restaurants pretty much, and I don't eat French fries because of the trans fatty acids. And I had a heart attack last November.
Sorry.
So if they eliminate trans fatty acids, probably actually I will go, occasionally to fast food restaurants, and business would actually be up.
So you imagine more customers in the restaurants if they can feel confident they're not going to get trans fats? Charles Hunt, how about that?
Well, certainly many of the people that have voluntarily made the switch have made it known to their customers in hopes that they would attract additional people. So, again, we don't have any problem with that. We have a problem with regulation versus education.
Is the argument all over here, Charles Hunt? I mean, New York's voted. The ban is, for now, it's on. Have you surrendered in the Big Apple?
Well, you never say never. We are exploring all the options. I don't want to say that there's going to be litigation, but there's always the possibility of that. As one of your previous callers stated, I think that a lot of people are objecting to the fact that the government is doing this in an Orwellian or a nannyism manner.
Charles Hunt with the New York State Restaurant Association, New York City chapter, thanks for being with us.
You're most welcome.
Kelly Brownell, you hear in our callers kind of the gamut there. Most of them saying, bring it on. I don't want trans fats in my French fries. I may go out to eat more if I can feel confident they're not there. But others saying, what about the civil liberties line here? And is there one we have to watch out for? What do you say in response to that?
Well, between you, Mr. Hunt, and your callers, a lot of issues, very interesting, important ones have been raised. Just on a couple of issues, factual issues that Mr. Hunt raised. He said that a lot of people are objecting to the nannyism. 95% of people who weighed in on the New York City trans fat ban, and this is all on the New York City Department of Health website, were in favor of it. Public opinion polls show vast numbers of people in favor of it. And so to imply that there's a sort of public uprising, I think, is mischaracterizing the reality of the situation. Also, industry very often, I mean, it's of course, if I were industry, I'd say the same thing. Don't regulate us. We'll regulate ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how much can you count on self-regulation? When the New York City Health Department gave restaurants a year to switch over, Mr. Hunt's informal polling of the restaurants notwithstanding, the Department of Health went to the restaurants to see what they were using, and there was no change in the number of restaurants using trans fat.
We've been joined by Professor Kelly Brownell, director of the Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity at Yale University. David's calling right now from Hopkinton, Massachusetts. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Well, hello, and I don't want to burden you with my, you know, gastronomic needs, but I consider it my right as an American to eat fried oysters at the beach in the summer and
I hear you.
Have some tempura. And I'm a physician, and I ask the waitress, the waitress inevitably doesn't know, and then I get the chef.
You mean, are these fried in trans fats or not?
Right.
And they've got no idea. And the chef?
And so they bring out the carton. You know, there's always a big
you look at it.
Wine carton. And I look at it and say, oh, well, I'd love to have your food, but it's really toxic to me and the rest of your customers. 9 out of 10 places that I've tried, although there's a one great place in Martha's Vineyard where you can get fried oysters and they do it right.
Right, right. So what does that tell you, that the ban is the way because otherwise restaurants themselves don't even know?
Exactly.
There it is. In a nutshell, Kelly Brownell.
How how can the customers know?
Right. If they don't know, maybe this is the only way. Kelly, there's a physician who doesn't want it and finds that the kitchens don't know themselves. How do you actually see this working? I mean, New York doesn't have an endless number of health inspectors. Are they going to have people looking over the shoulders of chefs and, you know, short order cooks watching what they dump in?
I don't really know the answer to that question. You'd have to ask the New York City Health Department people how they intend to enforce this. But the point David made, I think, is an excellent one, that even somebody with his knowledge and his motivation to eat healthy has to go way out of his way to find out whether they're trans fat. So the idea that you can educate people and still offer them unhealthy foods just makes no sense. It would be like saying, well, let's go ahead and have leaded gasoline, but we could educate people that it might be hurting the environment, or lead paint or things like that. When there are things that are patently dangerous to the public's health, it's the government's responsibility to get rid of them, and that's the case of this happening. By the way,
yes.
if I were a restaurant in New York City, a restaurant owner in New York City or any nationally, I would feel that the New York State Restaurant Association has let me down and that the National Association has let me down, because the danger of trans fats has been known for a very long time, and they could just see this kind of thing coming. It was just a matter of time until some city health commissioner took this action. And so for the restaurant association now to be scrambling and saying, oh, my God, it's going to be so hard on restaurants to make the changes, they should have been prepping the restaurants to do this for years, so this action would have never been necessary.
But you've had – this is big business. You've had McDonald's in New York City talking with people there, trying to, you know, say back off here because they still have trans fats to fry their French fries, and they're saying we can't find another way to make them taste all right. So, I mean, they're in there with big bucks on the line. You know they're going to be lobbying for changes or some way out of this.
How much would you be willing to bet that now that this ban is in effect, that McDonald's will solve this problem and be able to sell just as many French fries as they already did?
Do you think it may leverage a national change, in what even a huge chain like McDonald's does?
I sure hope so. What'll happen with a lot of times with these local actions is that a company like McDonald's or any of the other national chains can't very well afford to be doing something different in this city than it is to do than the next city or the city after that. And so once enough of these local changes kick in, it usually sends the industry pleading to Washington for some sort of a federal preemption. And then, which I think makes sense because they can't, you know, it really is in their best interest to do things in some uniform way across the country. So I don't object to that. But you hope then the federal government takes progressive action and actually does something that's in favor of the public health.
And whether it does or not, Wall Street Journal reporting other cities probably would follow New York. Let's get another New York voice in here, if I may. Ellis Hennison joins us. He's a columnist for Newsday, political analyst for Fox News, host of the Ellis Hennison Show on Talk Radio, the Talk Radio Network. Ellis, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, good to be with you, Tom. How are you today?
We're great. There you are. You've got the pastrami piled high and the French fries next to it in New York. And sometime in the next year, 6 months or year and a half, no trans fats, at least where they can be excluded. Are you for it or against it, Ellis?
Oh, God, who told you about my eating habits?
Yeah.
Listen, all of this has such a powerful echo. The big fight we had a few years ago about banning smoking in restaurants and bars. You know, New York was ahead of the curve on that as well. And all of Charles Hunt's members were just as hyperventilating about that. Oh, my God, the bar business was going to end. Restaurants were going to suffer. Their business has never done better. Customers are happier going out at night, and believe me, life will go on without trans fats in the restaurant business in New York.
Does it give you pause even for a second? Do you think that New York will be in there next saying, no pastrami, please, because the saturated fats are too high?
Well, we'd have riots if that happened. I don't think the politics will allow it. But listen, obviously, you know, nobody wants rat poison in the food, right? I mean, government does have a point at which it steps in and says, no, you can't put that in the food. It's too bad for you, and there are other alternatives. You know, I think in the trans fat thing, the case has been pretty well made by the nutritional people that, you know what, there really is other stuff you can use that is not hugely more expensive, doesn't taste rotten, and can actually work in the restaurant business. But 6 months is plenty of time for the other big oil. And by that I mean, you know, Wesson and Crisco and those guys. Believe me, they'll make some other stuff. There are a lot of restaurants in New York. We'll make them all rich, and they'll sell some stuff that won't kill us.
Why is New York ahead of the curve on these things? I mean, New Yorkers are kind of famous for, you know, don't get in my face. But here New York City is getting in its inhabitants' face a little bit, or you might say backing them up, I don't know, but on smoking, now on trans fats. Why New York City?
Two words. Mike Bloomberg. Something he cares about. Seriously, it's an example of a politician who says, listen, if I can do something to directly affect the day-to-day health of people in this town, I will have had more impact on the citizenry than anything else I do as mayor. I think the guy genuinely believes in it. You know, there's still a fight about where exactly do you draw the line. You know, is trans fats where? None of us want to have that law that one of your callers was talking about where, you know, if you're 181 pounds, you get to hauled to Rikers Island and please shrink down. I mean, and nobody's, there's no political movement for that. I mean, it's a little bit of a false boogeyman, I think. But, you know, I think the case has been made that trans fats falls on the side of the poison side of that line, and there are reasonable alternatives, and, you know, we're not that addicted to it. And the restaurant guys always complain about this stuff, and it always works out in the end.
Your mayor, Michael Bloomberg, a few years back, he was kind of a beefy guy. Now he's lean as can be. Is he going to have you all on treadmills down there, out jogging and eating tofu?
You know, he's still a little paunchy in the middle, if you want to know the truth.
Is that right? Okay, I have to look closer.
He's... Yeah, listen, he's like all of us slouching toward middle age, you know? I mean, it's a daily struggle. What can I tell you? I mean, you know, we eat bad, and nobody, I don't think anybody in New York, anywhere around the country, wants to, you know, have some kind of outside requirement that we all be perfect on this stuff. Eating bad is one of the great pleasures of life.
But let's make it a little easier to not eat quite so bad or have it better for us when we get over there. Let me turn to our listeners. Sarah is calling from Dunstable, Massachusetts. Hi, Sarah, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you? Thank you.
Yeah.
My son was diagnosed with high cholesterol, just a genetic problem, and we were already eating low fat. And I started reading labels to take trans fats out of our life.
How old was your son when he got the diagnosis, Sarah?
He's three.
Years old.
And we started taking trans fats out of everything, and I didn't before because I was ignorant. So now I look at all the labels, and there's so many great products out there without trans fats, and his numbers have dropped significantly.
No kidding. Just by mom shopping differently at the store. What's the toughest food to buy without trans fats in it? Have you had to change your diet?
Yes. The one thing a three-year-old loves, macaroni and cheese. A good macaroni and cheese does not exist. So I challenge any company to make a good macaroni and cheese.
Bring it on for Sarah's three-year-old. We're glad his numbers are down on cholesterol. That's terrific. Sarah, thanks for your call. Kelly Brownell, this is kind of in your bailiwick. I mean, it was just earlier this year that companies had to come out and say what trans fats, if any, were in their products. And consumers are following that quite closely, I'm guessing, from what I see at the supermarket.
Some consumers are, and Sarah is a great example of that. And the wonderful thing about her story is what she did very locally, that is in her own home, to get rid of the trans fats. Trans fats could be done on a citywide, statewide, or nationwide basis and potentially have a very big impact on public health. So she's sort of an in-person example of it working.
Let's get a call from Kathy in Fairfax, Virginia. Hi, Kathy, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm just kind of going to say a few things that I've heard a number of your guests say, and that is that I've been doing some research with childhood obesity and trying to reduce that, and we were working in some public schools in southern Arizona, and it became clear that the childhood obesity problem, and I don't think this is going to be news to many of your listeners, is related strongly to low income, and when we pursued that, it looks like low income and it's a lifestyle that's associated with low income. And what I mean by that is a lot of the parents are stuck, if they're working long hours, the children are being fed by brothers and sisters or feeding themselves, or the parents...
And the mac and cheese comes out pretty fast.
Yeah, it does, exactly. And the quick foods are the healthy ones. The healthy alternatives are more expensive, and they're not readily available in quick format. So that was my point, is that I think, although I'm not in favor of being regulated in how I eat, I don't need that regulation in my life because I have the luxury of making those choices. And I think a lot of the people out there who are suffering with obesity problems don't have that luxury.
Yep, Kathy, we got it. Ellis, how about it? What do you think New York's ban then means? Is this better for low-income families because if they go, you know, for dinner at McDonald's, they're less likely to have trans fats there? Or is it going to jack up the prices so even that alternative goes away?
I think the price thing is mostly a fake. The amount of money difference that it makes is trivial. The other piece of it, though, that nobody's talking about is you do have to get those tubby little kids out running around. I mean, you know, so many of these kids are just, you know, sitting in front of video games or on the couch all day. And, you know, this is only a small part of it. I mean, the amount of difference it's going to make on those fries at Mickey D's, or, you know, it's a nice step. But we certainly shouldn't be thinking that this is the end of the game.
Yep. Ellis, it's been great having you. The voice straight from New York, Ellis Hennison, columnist with Newsday. Thanks a lot for being with us.
Great to be with you guys.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Kelly Brunell, what about the issue of prices and poverty and who eats what in this country? Does this help or hurt when trans fats are forbidden? Maybe they haven't used them on Park Avenue in a while, but what about the other side of the tracks?
I'm delighted that Kathy raised that point. It's an excellent one. The fact is that poor diet in the United States disproportionately affects the poor, and there are any number of reasons, some of which Kathy stated. But in addition to that, people in poor neighborhoods generally don't have access to supermarkets where they can, you know, have lower prices. They have to buy from small markets where the accessibility of fresh fruits and vegetables tends to be low and the cost tends to be high. And they tend to be driven toward, because of the financial realities of their lives, towards packaged, processed, and fast food, and also things like soft drinks. And that, of course, contributes to a number of health consequences. So the fact is, I think this probably will help the poor a great deal, as it will help everybody.
You don't think it's going to drive the prices up so they get pinched on the price side while they're trying to work on their family's health?
No evidence of that at all. Well, you know, Wendy's made the change some time ago, and their prices haven't gone up. Frito-Lay got rid of all the trans fats in their snack foods several years ago, and they haven't had to jack up prices because of that, as far as I know. So there's no evidence at all that this will have an impact on price.
Mm. Let's go to Suzanne in Ames, Iowa. Hi, Suzanne. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I've been an emergency department nurse for 15 years, and I'm now an economics student because of the, you know, this is an emergency in our healthcare system. I think we're behind other industrialized nations in a lot of healthcare issues, and this is one of them. I believe Denmark hasn't allowed trans fats to be imported for a long time, and in some parts of Canada, I believe, don't allow it to be manufactured.
I know Denmark doesn't allow it. You're right. So you say, bring it on, New York. You're glad for it.
Well, yeah, my husband's cholesterol went from 317 to 170 7 years ago when we just stopped eating it. And it is worse than animal fat. We eat moderate amounts of saturated animal fat. Your body was made to eliminate that with a high-fiber diet. But it wasn't. Your body wasn't made to deal with trans fat. It's a lower density than the most saturated animal fat.
Right. So watch out, and happy to see it go. Suzanne, thanks for calling in from Ames, Iowa. Let me get a call from Lake Placid, New York. Carolyn, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi. I'm a nutritionist with a specialty in prenatal and early childhood nutrition.
What do you see out there?
And I am thrilled with this because there's some research that came out recently that trans fats reduce the content of fat in mother's breast milk.
That is, they reduce the quality of the breast milk.
Yes, and can lead to mothers assuming that their babies are always hungry because they can't make enough milk, when in fact their diet is what is causing them to feel that they have to stop nursing.
Wow,
so this could be a major step forward, especially for the poor population in New York, where we're trying to encourage breastfeeding.
So yet another angle and another reason to say no thanks. Let me get one more call from Lisbon, Connecticut. Isaac, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show today.
Thanks. Our time is short. What do you know, Isaac?
Oh, okay. Well, I've heard in the past that there's a correlation between cancer rates, increased rates of cancer, and the consumption of trans fats. And I was wondering if your expert there could speak to that.
Let us go straight to it, Isaac. Thanks for your call. Kelly Brunell, what about it? Cancer and trans fats?
Most of the work has been done to link trans fat to heart disease, and that's a pretty robust relationship. The relationship with cancer, I don't think, is definitive yet.
And what about alternatives? If you've got more people listening out there right now who say, well, I want to get this out of my own family's diet, where are the best places to look, and what about the things not to turn to, Kelly Brunell?
Because trans fats appear in so many products, donuts, snack foods, fried foods, etc., looking, there's nothing that you can, nothing that can substitute for looking at the labels. So the FDA, for example, if you go to the Food and Drug Administration website, which would be FDA.gov, there is information on trans fats and what to look for in labels and things like that. That can help a lot as you go out and be a smart consumer, as many of your callers have reported.
But if they load in then butter or palm oil or coconut oil, are those really good alternatives?
They're not the best alternative. So looking at things like olive oil and canola oil can help a lot.
Donuts in olive oil, it may be a while before our taste buds go to that path.
But many other oils can be used as substitutes that work just fine.
Right. Sounds like a day for celebration then in your view of what's going on in New York.
Yes.
Well, we hear it loud and clear. Kelly Brownell at Yale University's Rudd Center for Food Policy and Obesity. Professor Brownell, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.